On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
And welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Safer Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. All right, fall camp is in its final stages as Virginia wrapped up. We had our last media availability on Monday with the Cavaliers, talked to Tony Elliott, a few other players. But fall camp, it's almost over. Next week, we start game week. So I got Chris Wright here from thesaber.com joining me here today to do a little bit of our last camp report, week four, and a little bit of a fall camp recap. Chris, how have you enjoyed or not enjoyed fall camp so far?
You know, I'm always lukewarm on preseason practice, in part because we don't get really to see the practice part. We could see drills. So, I mean, you can tell there's more depth out there just because kind of the look of it. But really, what can you tell yet? You know what I mean? We've seen a handful of plays. Obviously, we hear reports from players when we talk to them. But in general, it's still really early with not a whole lot of data to know how much the roster infusion, you know, will influence what it looks like on the field.
You can see the depth just because the lines are longer. There's more groups of players. You know, especially on the offensive line, like I remember back on the first day of camp, I got over there and I was like, wait, there's like three different groups of offensive linemen all doing different stuff right now. Like usually it's like one group doing one thing because either half the group is injured or they just don't have that much depth and it's a bunch of walk-ons or whatever. So yeah, you could see the depth a little bit, see a few scrimmage plays here and there. I think half of them were either, you know, quarterbacks kind of getting touched down for sacks or, you know, that quick pass to the tight end. We saw a lot of passing to the tight ends over the two scrimmages. So, yeah, not a whole lot to take, but I think we'll start with the camp headlines. And obviously the biggest one is some of the injuries that we've seen in this fall camp. And we had Tony Elliott confirm on Monday that Cam Robinson, linebacker, is going to be out for a couple games, as he put it, a couple games before he's ready to roll with a fractured collarbone. That's what sources had told me as well. Elliott said it happened in the first full day of pads, which was their seventh day of practice. But, you know, the timeline that Elliott kind of roughly outlined there kind of matches what sources told me originally, which was 6 to 7 weeks with the collarbone. He had a procedure. I think he said the stitches were coming out soon this week. So he's kind of getting back into the conditioning rehabilitation stage. But be a couple games before we see him. I think I've maybe thought like maybe Stanford or Florida State is right about when we see Cam Robinson again. But obviously a big blow.
Yeah, a little confusing, right? Because he used quiet language. It wasn't specific language. A couple of games. Yeah. I know what a couple means. It's two, but I don't know that that's what he meant, right? So
I'm trying to teach my toddler that every day.
Right, yeah. So, somewhere in the September range would be the best outcome, right? Now, it's a collarbone. You have to see how he heals. People heal, you know, at different rates, particularly younger people. It doesn't sound like it was serious other than the surgery part. That's the other part that's a little confusing. Like, it didn't show up on an x-ray, according to Coach Elliott. Yeah. But then when they did a follow-up scan, it did, which, I mean, certainly if it was completely dislodged or whatever, the x-ray would have shown it. So it must have been a small something, but it was enough to do surgery. Although that seems like just a bid to get him back on the field as fast as possible. So, you know, maybe a small fracture you can let heal if you're, I don't know, sitting at a keyboard like we are, but you know, he's got a little more pressing job where they want him back on the field. So it'll be interesting. If it's by Florida State, I would basically call that a win in terms of timetable, right? Like, yeah, to me, that still feels early. You know, I know 6 to 7 weeks is right around there, but you know, you will see. And they can obviously put probably some sort of padding on there or something to protect it a little bit, to give him some confidence, I would think. But I guess we'll see what the actual timetable turns out to be, but optimistically would be Stanford, Florida State, somewhere through there for the start of ACC play. Reminder that second game is not an ACC game. I know some fans are still not quite remembering that or on board with that. So just that NC State game is a non-conference game.
Yeah, definitely a tough injury for a linebacker too, just the contact and thuds and everything. The way that Elliot put it, it seemed like it was something that, probably would have healed on its own, but it just would have taken longer. So let's go ahead, do the procedure now. And it maybe was it. I think that how he put it, it was like it wasn't necessarily something that they needed to do now, but like later on the season, it was probably going to get worse and eventually just be kind of a full-on break or whatever. So I think that that's why they went ahead and did now. Plus, early season, you could maybe spare to lose Cam Robinson for a few games earlier on in the year when your schedule's a little bit more manageable, compared to kind of, down the stretch of the season when you lose them in the middle of the year, that's a little less manageable. And you can kind of have the time to prep, backups, who are going to get more playing time right now. I know Landon Danley's kind of been the main guy that's kind of been filling Cam Robinson's position there in camp, next to James Jackson at the linebacker position. Obviously, the other big one in camp was the Michaelin Thomas injury, and that kind of maintains the same, fractured a bone in his right foot. 3 month timetable for that. Although Coach Elliott said Ethan Sipe had a similar injury last year, and we know that Sipe did not play last year. So that's always a possibility. Jamarik Morris, ACL injury, he's out for the season. Overall, how do you think UVA kind of made it through camp, injury wise? I know a lot of people are going to react to some of these bigger names that are getting injured and some of the lengths of these injuries, but how do you think they made it through?
I feel like that's a little lower on the season ending, types of injuries than it has been during Elliott's tenure. Like, it seems like some years it would be a half a dozen, that you might lose for the season during that period of time or most of the season. This is only a handful, two or three guys that we've been told are going to miss the whole season. So that's the other part. But the more interesting part to me is all these sort of nagging ones, like, soft tissue is what Coach Elliott called them. So ankles, hamstrings, muscle strains, whatever. How serious are those? We have no way of knowing. There's a lot of experienced guys, even the new guys are experienced. So you can be a little more patient, I think, with it. Even though they're new to your scheme, listen, like rolling to cover two is rolling to cover two, regardless. You know what I mean? Like, so guys who have done that a whole bunch of times in college should be able to adapt to that. So those are the ones I'm more curious about, like these sort of precautionary. Well, he was out for a week. Well, what was he out for a week? Because it's August and he doesn't need the reps. Like, if this was September the 20th against Stanford, would he have been out that week? That's the more interesting part to me. So I guess we'll see kind of how some of those shuffle out, once the final part of preparation happens.
Yeah, some of the ones you're mentioning, Elliot talked about Trell Harris. I think he said a hamstring for him. Mekhi Buchanan had an ankle, I think a high ankle sprain, and then Hunter Osborne, another ankle injury. But he thinks all of them should be ready for kickoff. They'll be cleared by then. With Trell Harris, again, it's a veteran guy, like you mentioned before. So you would think that he'd be good to go once they get there. Mekhi Buchanan and Hunter Osborne, a little bit younger in the program, not as experienced, but also believes that they should be ready to go. The interesting one to me is we haven't seen him all fall camp except just kind of standing on the sidelines is Christian Charles, the transfer defensive back from Tennessee, who we believe will probably be one of the guys in that spur kind of hybrid corner safety position there, because he's got a lot of experience both playing corner and safety in the past. He's been out with a calf injury. It's not a shoulder injury like some people thought that he's dealt with in the past, but it's been a calf injury. And, those soft tissue injuries are always a little trickier, just kind of the timetable and recovery and everything. As I've learned over the years watching soccer, like, a hamstring is you don't know what it's going to be, like how long that's going to keep you out and everything. But Charles is expected to be back, I think, this week for practice. So that would put him on target to be ready for that first game. I think kind of how they're using that spur spot right now is interesting. Jason Pervard has been playing a lot there as a nickel. So I think they want to use both of them there, just kind of depending on the situation. But looking pretty good outside of those main long-term injuries. The other big one is Antonio Clary. they said the plan has always been end of August for him. So I don't know how that lines up. I'm probably not going to play for that Coastal Carolina game if the target is end of August and they play Coastal on August 30th, but we'll see there just kind of, it when he gets cleared and when he's back in action.
Right. I mean, he would know the schemes and stuff. So he's going to be able to play if he's in game shape.
That's the
Right. So
thing. He's
that's the part
because he
about the
hasn't even
Coastal.
been like out there running around. He's just been standing on the sidelines.
Yeah, at least not when we're there, right? Now I'm sure he's on a bike or in the underwater treadmill inside the facility or something, to try to sustain wind or whatever. But yeah, he should be able to play. It will be about conditioning once he's cleared. So he should know the schemes and whatnot. There are other guys too that Coach Elliott didn't mention. I mean, we see all kinds of guys in yellow and green and on a bike for a day, or the one the other day was Sudarian Harrison. Like he was sort of over in the rehab group. But it could have been anything, like a mild, whatever, mild contusion or an ankle sprain or whatever. So those are the interesting ones. And so that's the whole thing for this whole Virginia football team this year, right? In the past, if I threw out those five or six names, Clary, Harrison, Osborne, et cetera, Buchanan, whoever, you would go, oh no, like those guys, like, right? The theory is that they have enough, dudes, right? Is that how everybody says it? That they have enough dudes that they can roll guys in and out, and it shouldn't matter as much. Certainly the receiver core, you look at that, I guess Charles Harris is the number one receiver, I guess, but there's a whole lot of guys in that group that are going to be given opportunities to make plays. So we'll see. That's the million-dollar question or multi-million-dollar question for this year's team, right? Like, literally, is there enough depth to kind of make it through the season as these kind of soft tissue injuries and those sort of things come up, as they will during the football season?
And like the Charles Harris injury was so interesting last year because it kind of took away their only deep threat on the roster, but they think they have more deep threats this year, even if Harris has to sit out a couple plays and just through rotation and everything. I mean, Cam Ross is who Keith Gaither has said is the MVP of the fall camp so far on the offensive side. He's got a ton of speed and he claims to be the fastest player on the team, so that's a good sign. He'll probably play in the slot a lot and maybe, flex outside too. He's got experience in both, but Jamal Edgerton's another guy. He's bigger, but he's got some serious wheels too. So they've got some more options there, like you said, just that they have not had in the past at pretty much every position. Like there's not a position that you could look at and say, all right, they don't have a couple options there. Speaking of
Trevor
which,
Morris talked a
oh,
little bit
go ahead.
about Josiah Abdullah during the media availability yesterday, as a freshman that came into the spring. But like, he's a freshman, so there's an adapting period still happening. But apparently he's making some plays in camp too. So I mean, that's all the way down to one of the really young guys, that's just could be out there and make a few plays this season. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, he's an interesting one because I talked about this, a couple weeks ago with Greg when he was on for the camp report, talking about Corey Costner and just how like sometimes these freshmen come in as midseason enrollees and they get a lot of hype because of the new faces there and the freshmen that everyone's looking at, and then you kind of go through a summer and then you get to the fall and the kind of the hype fades away a little bit. And so you hadn't heard as much about Abdullah. So it is interesting because a lot of people were excited about him coming out of the spring game because he looked really good out there. I know the coaches are still excited about him because this is a guy that had multiple SEC offers, was previously committed to another SEC school. So like, there's a lot of excitement around him and Corey Costner too. Corey, I've heard his name brought up a ton, as a guy that's kind of rising up the depth chart this fall.
That name continuously comes up. He obviously made a little bit of a splash in the spring game as well. So he's going to be out there. The question is how much. I would expect him to be a big special teams factor at the minimum. How many defensive snaps he takes, I think that comes down to that same position you're talking about, that Prevard, Charles, Spur hybrid safety linebacker sort of something, right? Like, however they decide to use it, they use it differently all the time. So it'll be interesting just to see. But I think he is one of the guys that is in the mix there, so he could get on the field at that spot specifically.
Well, let's look at some of the position battles that have kind of been, the hardest to like kind of gauge throughout camp, and maybe we have some better answers, more clear answers now. We'll start on the offensive line because I think base off what we've seen and what we've heard, the left side of the offensive line is pretty rock solid with Mikhail Boley, Noah Josi, and then Brady Wilson, the UAB transfer coming in at center, who's been a big standout in camp. We can talk about him more later, but that left side seems pretty good. It's been the right side that they're trying to figure out, and that's been hampered by injuries. Originally, they brought Monroe Mills in to play that right tackle position. He gets hurt in the spring. Then they bring in Mikalen Thomas to play the right tackle position. He gets hurt in the fall. So now they're on to Wallace Unamba, who, interestingly enough, he was someone they targeted back in the winter transfer portal before he transferred from New Mexico, having played for Bronco Mendenhall, then went to Kentucky for one spring practice, and then he entered the transfer portal again after the spring, and now here he is finally at Virginia. Some good reports coming out about him. I talked to Chandler Morris about him. Was pretty high on Wallace Unamba. Talked to Mitchell Melton about it, because that's who he's facing every day in practice. And he's a big guy, but he's athletic. I know Tony Elliott joked that he would like him to lose a couple more pounds. I think he's around 340 something right now. He's a big guy at right tackle. The other guys that have kind of been over there, Ben York, is a guy that kind of a younger guy that has some potential there. But I think Wallace has been the guy that's been running with the ones the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I took a picture of Wallace during one of these open periods we get for the 15, 20 minutes. That's a big dude. Like he's really, really big. And he doesn't look slow. So like, he's not a burner. Yeah, he's not gonna go fly around, but he's not someone that hopefully will have that much trouble with speed edge rushers simply because he's so big. If he can get his hands on them, I mean he's just really, really I think they call him the wall, right? Wallace. So I mean that's a big guy. So if he can figure it out, that would answer a lot of the questions. Ben York's name has come up. I don't think he's ready. That's just my opinion. So I think the next would be Jack Whitmer more than it would be Ben York, regardless of who was getting reps there, because sometimes you give guys reps because they need the reps. You could see other people that could swing out there as well that played tackle previously at other schools or mix and match. If it doesn't work, okay, well, remember like Brian Stevens, when he first came in, wasn't at center. He was at guard and then moved him like game three. And then he became an all ACC honorable mention type of center the rest of his career. So just because game one is almost here doesn't mean that the final makeup of what that will look like up front is solved. And even Coach Elliott said, even the left side is getting pushed. Now, how much of that is speaking in the media to keep those guys hungry? Who knows? But I wouldn't say it's a lock that Boley and Josie are safe as well. Like the whole point was to create competition and depth. If they're not getting the job done, replace them. Right? You need to win games. So we've gone through the building phase and establishing culture and putting up the studs. Isn't that the whole thing? We're building the model program and construction phase is over. All right. Like we need to go out there and win some games. So if guys aren't performing, I would expect other guys to get shots. That's why you brought in so many guys. Brady Wilson is interesting. Apparently, Metcalf has been pushing him a little bit at center. Metcalf has been in that right guard spot a decent amount. Where does Tyshawn Wyatt fit in? Right? Like he was out in the spring and early in camp, but has getting some reps since. Has he emerged? Like I'm very curious to see, do they rotate? In other words, do we see more guys out there than we're used to seeing for Virginia? And when they rotate, are they still effective? Right? And then who the heck are in those spots? I think that will actually change more than we anticipate. I don't think we're writing in pen right now.
No. Still pencil. We have the option to erase. You mentioned the rotation part of that. That's something interesting that I caught from Elliot, because the way that he was talking about it, he was like, we could go big up there with, bringing Ethan Sipe in next to Wallace Unamba. And I'm like, well, that sounds like it's a rotation, like you're bringing in Sipe to, kind of spell maybe Metcalf that's playing that right guard position. He's not a bigger guy at right guard. So if you bring in Sipe to play right guard or play right tack, it's interesting. I think they are going to approach it kind of similar to they did last year, but maybe with more options, just rotating a couple guys in there on the offensive line. You want to keep the continuity. But I think they have more options. A couple other guys at the right tackle spot that could slide over, if we get to that point in the season. David Walaba, the Syracuse transfer, Jack Whitmer, like you mentioned, Tyshawn Wyatt, you just mentioned him. He's played right guard, he's played right tackle. So he has experience at both, and I don't really know where to put him at right now because at the beginning of camp he was running with the ones at the right guard spot, and then he missed some time, so Drake Metcalf kind of moved into that spot. He's come back now, and I still don't know really where to put him. It seems like right guard is the next spot on my position battles to look at right here, and it seems like Metcalf is kind of moved into the number one tier, but again, like I wouldn't put that in pen, maybe not even pencil, just kind of think about it for right now.
And remember, he hasn't played football in a long time. So just
Exactly.
because you're
Yeah.
playing football in camp is not the same thing as playing football in a game, right? In camp, you know a lot of what your teammates' tendencies are, and you're protected in some ways, right? Like the quarterback can't actually be hit; he can only be touched or whatever. Like it's different when the game starts. So, and that's not just him; that's Wyatt and some other guys too who have missed time from injuries in the past. So, talking to Metcalf, he sounds just like Coach Heffernan. Like
Yeah. Oh, they've
it's
got a lot of
uncanny,
experience with each other.
right? They do, but like it, just the cadence and the way he speaks and all that, it's like, whoa, like you sound exactly like your coach. So he could be just a candidate that holds things together, right? Glue type of guy that knows what's expected. You said he's not very big, which says a lot about how they've transformed the line, right? He's 6'2", 300.
Yeah. It's
That's
all
big. That's big, right? Like
relative.
now, if you're talking about who they're replacing there, a lot of the guys there in the past, the Ty Furniss, those type of guys, had trouble getting to 300 and staying there,
Yeah.
right? They were more 285, 290, which is also not small, but it just made me smile. I was like, oh, so now we're calling 300 not very big because of some of the guys they brought in.
That's big boy football now. Other position on offense I wanted to look at is wide receiver, and I think that they, yeah, it's going to have a lot of rotation there this year. We talked about, maybe Terrell Harris is the number one receiver, but it's a very different year for this offense, because first year of under Coach Elliott, you had Dontayvion Wicks, then you had Malik Washington, then you had Malachi Fields. That was like the de facto number one wide receivers each year. You don't really have that this year. I think Terrell Harris would have the biggest claim to that because he has experience in the system and he looked good last year. And I think he's been a favorite target of Chandler Morris from what he's told me. But kind of the three names that I'm going to pull out here are the ones that Chandler. Like I asked him what skill position players are standing out to you, and he immediately went, Jamal Edgerrin, Trell Harris, Cam Ross. Those are the three that he talked the most about. And I know Jaden Thomas, the Notre Dame transfer, JT as they call him, he'll work his way into there as well. We'd mentioned Za'Darian Harrison, Cam Courtney, Josiah Abdullah. Even Eli Wood has been the guy that I see getting a lot of second team reps. Andre Green was a guy they said, made a lot of growth over the summer. So they'll have rotation there. But those three guys right there seem like the guys that Chandler at least has been talking up the most.
I think Cam Ross's name has probably come up the most across the board
Yeah.
from different names, which is interesting. He didn't have a great year at JMU. He had a good year, but not the UConn type of numbers that he put up prior to that. So I was speaking to someone yesterday, while we're at the media thing, and it's like, well, it is a contract year. At JMU, he knew he had another year of eligibility. Right now, any league hopes depend on having a good year. And sometimes when you're in a contract year, your focus is really, really good. So I don't know if that's what's going on with Cam Ross, but if he delivers the way they're sort of talking about, it'll be interesting to see, right? Even if it's Malik Washington light, you know what I
Yes.
mean? Like half of what Malik Washington did would be a really, really good year. So, I'm not putting Malik Washington numbers on. That's not going to happen. There's too many guys, but anything in the neighborhood of half would be a really big year. It seems like a different name every week, though, doesn't it? Right?
Yeah.
Like, so we've heard Abdullah, at times in the spring. And then Coach Elliott mentioned Ty Lyric Coleman looked kind of picked up where he left off when he got injured last year. You mentioned Cam Courtney. That name comes up off and on. Andre Green comes up off and on. It's a lot of different guys' names coming up. And I don't know if that means nobody's doing anything or if that means everybody's doing something. We do know that Chandler Moore spreads the ball around.
Yeah.
We've been told by multiple guys that he doesn't lock in on one guy, that he throws it to where he thinks is the best spot to throw it. So that could be, different guys doing that. We saw Dylan Newton Short. Virginia doesn't release a whole lot of clips from those scrimmages that it holds, but
Saw
this
that
past
one.
Saturday scrimmage, Dylan Newton Short had a touchdown catch. So, that's another freshman in the mix.
Well, the top
It's a
fresh.
long list. It's a long list.
Well, the top freshman that Keith Gaither had off the top of his mind was Isaiah Robinson. He's a guy that, got a lot of excitement from, some people. And when I post that clip, a lot of UVA players like that one too, because I think he's been showing out in camp. And the one name that I keep coming back to because it doesn't get a lot of attention, and that's why I was surprised when Chandler brought it up, because I just haven't heard his name in a while since probably the spring, was Jamal Edrin, the Purdue transfer, because I thought he looked really good in the spring game, and it seemed like Chandler and him kind of had a little bit of a mind meld going on, especially in some scramble drills in the spring. Because I think he had six catches or something like that in the spring game. I can't remember how many, but he found him a lot. And I just haven't heard his name as much, and I haven't seen him at practice that much either. I know Chandler said that he was taking a ton of classes over the summer. To kind of, I guess, catch up there academically. So maybe that's kind of playing a part into how much we see him in practice. But I mean, the guy is 6'3", 220 or something like that. I wrote an article back in the spring about him. He's physically really imposing, and he's also a really good athlete that had a really good start to his career at FAU and then went to Purdue and had a little bit of a down year, but that was one of the worst Power Four programs in the country last year. So not going to take anything away from him there. So I'm interested, what does he look like when we get there? If Morris is kind of singing his praises, even though we haven't necessarily seen as much of him in fall practice.
So ultimately, what might differentiate some of these guys is not catching the football. It might be the other stuff like run blocking, route running, precision. So Terrell Harris mentioned to me that one of Coach Mims' kind of pet peeves is aligning correctly. So if you're supposed to be on top of the numbers, be on top of the numbers. Don't be a yard to the left or a half a yard to the left. Be where you're supposed to be. So when you start nitpicking that long of a list, does it come down to that stuff and maybe versatility, right? So we've heard that Cam Ross can play multiple positions. We've heard that Andre Green can play a couple of positions. Terrell Harris can play different positions. These guys can move around more, which means they can stay on the field when somebody else rotates on. They just maybe rotate over a spot. Chandler Morris even joked yesterday that Cam Ross maybe takes too many reps because when they need somebody to go in and it's not clear who that somebody's going to be, he just goes. Just to keep the tempo up and keep practice running. So it'll be interesting to see how that all shuffles out. And again, this could be different guys every week in the season too, just like it has been the feedback we've been getting.
Well, that just takes me back to my favorite quote from that Cam Ross story, is he was just like, I just want to be undeniable. Like, you have to find a reason to not put me on the field. And that's it seems like if he's just jumping out there to take every rep, like, seems like he's well on his way.
And special teams
Defensively,
can play in that too, right? So if he, let's say he takes the kickoff return, maybe he doesn't play for a couple of snaps because he just ran the ball back 30 yards, 35 yards, hopefully more, and got hit, right? So maybe he sits out the next couple of plays. So that part, there's a lot of like moving things that are going to fit into the choices there.
Defensively, the position, there's a couple different ones. I think the defensive line, they're going to rotate so much. I don't think it necessarily matters who necessarily is the ones there. Linebacker seems pretty settled now. You got James Jackson coming back, and we'll see what happens in the spot where Cam Robinson's supposed to be. But Landon Danley's been the one taking most of those snaps, and the other guys are coming back from injuries. But the secondary has been the biggest question mark, only because we don't know any of these guys. And the bigger thing is, as Tony Elliott mentioned, a lot of them have been hurt or banged up this fall, so they haven't gotten consistent reps out there. So I know Greg, our friend from the Daily Progress, continues to ask who is standing out in this cornerback room, and Tony Elliott continues to say, I'm not really sure yet. Like, we're still trying to figure that out because, they just haven't had as many reps, and you're still kind of figuring it out. It seems like, they're all kind of on equal playing field, but that cornerback position, I think they said this week they finally got pretty much everyone healthy. So this week's going to do a lot in determining who's going to start out there. One of the bigger transfer names they got was Emmanuel Carnley, the guy who was at Arizona, then he was at Miami for a spring. Now he's at Virginia. He was kind of like the highest rated cornerback they brought in. And he's been kind of battling an injury, and he just got back out there. And so Elliot kind of mentioned his name. Donovan Platt has been injured recently, but he's been one of the guys that's standing out. Jordan Robinson's been getting a lot of reps because I think he's been the only guy that stayed healthy. And then so on and so on. You've had a lot of names out there, but I still can't put two and two together with this cornerback group at this point.
Yeah, I think it's mostly guesses,
Yeah.
right? So the first scrimmage, Josiah Persinger, the freshman, was out there with the ones. And a lot of that's because of what you just said. A lot of guys have been injured, but I think I expect Carnley to be out there
Yeah.
if he's healthy. Otherwise, Devin Neal at safety is probably a lock.
Yes.
I think a lot of other spots in the secondary just aren't, right? It could be a lot of different people that emerge in different places, whether that's the hybrid spot we talked about earlier, whether it's corner, whether it's safety, right? And does that change if Clary is available? Is Clary and Neal a given if Clary is comes back healthy at the end of this waiting to be cleared period? So yeah, a lot of questions left in the secondary. And listen, the secondary is really important. So if they don't get it figured out, that's the kind of thing that could submarine a season.
Yeah.
Right. So it's extremely important that somebody emerges there. The names I don't ever hear very much that I f that that were transfers in, Keenan Johnson started a bunch of games at Georgia Tech, and then DeMarcus Crosby, who came into the media scrum at during one of these availabilities we've had, but you don't ever hear him mentioned by anybody. But he
Yeah.
was brought in the media room. Now, part of that was because Greg was writing a story,
Yes.
but where does he figure in? Because his last two stops, he emerged as a starter, even if maybe he wasn't supposed to be. Right? So
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see where there's just a lot of experience over there. And is it too much? Is it so many guys that can't make up their mind as
Yeah.
coaches? I'm not being critical. I'm saying sometimes it's hard when there's not like a differentiator. But that's the kind of thing that could really like cause problems if you can't settle in and if guys don't feel comfortable because they haven't gotten the rhythm or whatever. So it's going to be a critical decision for them to make, and then they're going to have to give it a little bit of time to see if it works, but also be flexible enough to use all this depth they have. So that's going to be one of the challenges for Coach Rudzinski, I think.
Yeah, I thought it's interesting you mentioned Crosby because I thought when they brought him in from New Mexico State, I thought he was kind of the safety blanket for if Clary wasn't up to speed yet and he could start next to Devin Neal. But it's been Ethan Minter that's been getting most of the first team safety reps and evidently looking pretty good. Tony Elliott said he had an interception in practice on Monday. So Minter looks like a guy that's definitely going to play a big factor in that secondary. If I had to guess on the corner spots at this point, I would still go with Carnley just because how highly rated he was, and it seems like he's getting reps as soon as he gets back into practice now. And then if Platt is healthy, also probably Donovan Platt just because he's been the guy that has been kind of talked about the most there. But I could see Jordan Robinson being out there. I think Persinger is a really interesting developmental name. But also not someone that they brought up when I ask about freshmen. So that's kind of interesting too, that he's been getting all the first team reps. But gosh, I wouldn't place any bets on the secondary at this point. Looking at just any other guys that are kind of making noise in camp, we talked about Cam Ross. One name that I wanted to bring up, and then if you wanted to pick a name too, I've listed a couple here, but is Daniel Kalen is getting some interesting buzz lately from Tony Elliott saying that they got to find a way to put him out there on the field this year. I don't know what that looks like, but he said it on multiple times. I think he made a radio appearance recently in Charlottesville, and then he was also talking about it in the press conference the other day. So clearly that's something on his mind. I don't know what that looks like because it's not like Kalen or Morris or like these. They're good athletes. They're not like this tremendous athlete that you got to find a way to put them out there.
Right. So I would say two things. One, he said that all last season as well, and Tony Musket never played until the end. So we're going to need both guys. Whatever. Coach
Yeah.
speak, keep guys engaged, blah, blah, blah. But that's my first reaction to that. My second reaction to that is, in theory, he was brought in and sold on the fact that you are the heir apparent after Chandler Morris. And if that's the case, you don't want him going into 2026 if everything goes well and everyone's still here, both transfer portal and coaching wise. You don't want him to go in completely green. So you do
Yeah.
have to get him on the field in some way. The other part there is Chandler Morris has an injury history. So I don't think you wait around until Chandler Morris maybe gets injured. Knock on wood. I hope he doesn't, blah, blah, blah. Right. But I think Coastal Carolina, if there's an opportunity, put him in the game. Don't
William and
wait
Mary, yeah.
until. The last series of the game.
Yeah.
If
No,
there's an
definitely.
opportunity, go ahead and do it. And of course, everybody's favorite Grady Brosterhouse. Hopefully, the Grady Bunch is still a thing. New, 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 new cast of characters, but hopefully, it's still a thing because it was one of their more effective things at quarterback.
Haven't heard much as much about that this fall.
Well,
Is there anyone else?
it's not
I
novel,
know.
so we don't ask about it
Yeah,
anymore.
that's true. Anyone else offensively that's kind of stuck out to you? We've talked about Cam Ross, and I feel like I've talked about the running backs a bunch, but I threw them in here too.
Yeah, that's the name that comes up the most is Jamari Taylor. His name comes up constantly as being just a little bit different. Coach Elliott did say in this week's availability that Xavier Brown looks as good as he's ever looked, has not missed a single practice, right? He has an injury history that's always the question he gets when he comes in there, right? Oh, but can you stay healthy? So, keep an eye on those two guys. Dakota Twitty's been talked about a lot this offseason. As another guy to maybe keep an eye on. I think John Rogers, he's the one I think I wrote in. I did summer reading position by position. I think he was my breakout candidate at tight end. So keep an eye on John Rogers. If he can get it figured out, he has the tools to make some plays, I think. Say Jenna's coming off injury, but we'll see. Again, there's a lot of names on this roster that feel like they could contribute. Now, when the chips are on the table in 2 weeks, we're going to start finding out who actually has real chips and who has goldfish playing poker.
Yeah, I know Tony Elliott and Des Kitchens have talked about in the past that they like to have three tight ends just ready to go in these games. And you got Dakota Twitty, you've got Sage Ennis. Can John Rogers kind of stake his claim and be that third guy there? I know that's what they're hoping for. Defensively, we talked about a couple guys already. The one I want to throw out here, just because I don't feel like he gets talked about a ton, but I've heard it a lot recently, and I asked Chandler Morris, like, who is the one guy defensively who has given you the most headaches this fall camp? And it was honestly not a name I expected, and it was Dan Rickert, the transfer from Tennessee Tech. He's like 6'2", 250 pounds, just about. I know Jeff White just wrote an article about him as well. But yeah, it's just a guy that's been a menace just getting into the backfield. I went and watched, we got to see, a couple scrimmage plays a couple weeks ago, and I think there was only like maybe three or four plays that the second unit was in there for. And I think Rickert caused or was in the backfield on two out of the four plays. Like, he is a guy that beats guys off the line. And I was even seeing a little bit of a bull rush from him, which you're not expecting when you're seeing a 6'2", 250-pound guy going up against a Division I offensive tackle. So he's one I had my eye on, especially in like maybe some situational pass rush situations like third down and stuff. You could kind of get him in there. They ran with that kind of, I don't know what they called it, but it was kind of a NASCAR package last year where they got kind of their four best pass rushers up there, honestly, because they had to do something last year. They couldn't get any pass rush. But that could even look more interesting with the personnel they have now.
I think Rickert's name is interesting simply because of where he's coming from and how big he is. The fact that they did not have a great pass rush last year, if he's making any plays back there, maybe that's why it's standing out. The question for me is that's not an every down player,
No, it's
right?
not.
So he's only effective if you can stop the run and put teams in a obvious passing situation. Then a guy like that comes into the equation. So I'm more interested in other guys, right? The guys in that interior, obviously we know Jameer Carter. I'm fascinated to see what Jason Hammond does, because he was decent as the starter the first four games last year and was, on an upward trajectory and then boom, out for the season. So he was slowly seeming to get his sea legs under him as a regular rotation guy when that happened. I asked Coach Rodzinski about him. He said he looks great in camp. He's picked up right where he left off. He's probably going to be a starter in there, is my guess, alongside Carter. It could be somebody else, but that's just my guess. He can move in or out now, apparently. He's not just a nose tackle. So can he slide out to defensive end? So that's the guy I'm watching, because if somebody in that defensive end, defensive tackle, non-hybrid, non-pass rusher spot plays really well or gives Jameer Carter reinforcements, that's why Hunter Osborne's ankle injury that we mentioned back earlier is interesting, because he's a guy. I interviewed Jacob Holmes. There's another one on the interior, right? Very successful at Fresno State. Had a lot of sacks at Fresno State. Fresno State's bigger than, say, Daniel Rickert's FCS school. So is he someone who no one's talking about and just kind of quietly going about his business? And when this is real, is he a guy that can, make a play from a defensive tackle or a three technique or zero? Some of those interior guys I'm much more interested in than flashy. I'm not interested in flashy. I don't think this team needs flashy. I think this team needs down after down after down after down effectiveness. Right? We've seen flashy in the Elliott era, right? We've seen Malik Washington, et cetera. I don't really care. Can you run the ball in from the 5 yard line? Can you stop teams when it's third and three? I'm fascinated by those answers.
No, that's all fair. I would say Hunter Osborne seems like he's in line to get a lot more snaps than I was expecting. I mean, he's just a young guy, hasn't had a lot of experience at the Division One level, but he was running out there with the first team unit, the few plays that we've seen. And if he's
Highly,
held
highly rated recruit.
highly rated recruit, if he's healthy, I think he's going to play a factor in there. Probably in I saw, I guess, one series there was like, they had Jameer Carter and Hunter Osborne as like the first two defensive tackles out there. Then they took Carter out and moved Hammond in there, but they switched spots and it seemed like more of a unit that could kind of get up the field. So it's interesting that it looks like they're really going to use that rotation a lot there. And Anthony Britton's a guy that, had a lot of playing time last year too, so he's certainly going to factor in there. Well, only other one I'll throw out there is because it was interesting that, we always talk about how safeties are leading the team in tackles, and Tony Elliott said, "I'd rather the linebackers be the ones that do that." And so we'll see if that happens this year. I really have liked what I've seen from James Jackson in camp. He looks like he's moving around a lot better, which has kind of been his bugaboo the last couple of years because he keeps getting injured. So if he can stay healthy, he looks really good. And then Landon Danley, just he looks like he moves a little bit differently for a linebacker that size. He's a really long, big at linebacker. So if you can kind of keep off those blockers and move around really well, I really like what this linebacker group can look like holding down the fort until Cam Robinson gets back.
Danley played safety in high school. So, that's something to keep an eye on. He does move well. If he's someone that gets thrown into that role because of Cam Robinson's absence, does that open a pathway for someone's, because he's really on the start of his career. He's got 3 years left, so, or three potential years left. So it'll be interesting to see like kind of how that develops. I don't worry too much about the safeties making the tackles. Listen, there's three of them on the field. Okay, you're running a 4-2-5. So there's only two linebackers out there. There's a reason your linebacker, there's only two of them. There's only so many tackles those two guys can make. So it'll be interesting. Some of that is scheme. Obviously offenses try to avoid linebackers in their designs, right? They try to take out the linebacker and make a defensive back make the tackle. So there's lots of ebb and flow going on in that answer. I think again, I thought that was motivational. I want to see these linebackers do their thing as much as it was like, I really hope they top the tackles list. I don't think anybody cares who tops the tackles list as long as the points per game is low.
Unless you could make some kind of bet on it that I'm not aware of. But well, it was interesting though that like he was saying like maybe they're up the tackles list because the defensive line is kind of clearing the path for them to make more of those plays next year. So that'd be interesting to watch. One thing
Yeah,
I
those
wanna
tackles, I told you, the defensive tackles, that's what it's all about right now to me. Like,
I always go back to Trey McDonald when he said, he loves playing behind that big butt of Jameer Carter just because the path that he clears up there and the multiple blockers that he takes on. One question I want to get into, because I don't think I've really tackled it on the podcast since maybe the schedule came out months and months ago, is how easy slash difficult is this UVA schedule? Because we've all heard it. ESPN Power Index ranks UVA as the easiest schedule in the Power Four. We keep hearing how easy this schedule is, and a lot of the optimism is tied to how, manageable the schedule is. There's zero preseason AP top 25 games. Chris, do you view this as easy a schedule as people are making it out to be?
I personally am not buying, but I'm the wrong person to ask because I am well known both by media members and on the message boards as all games for the most part are toss-up games. So I think it's better to put teams into buckets, right? So there's no one in a bucket that they can't carry the water right now. There is no USC 2008, the first game of 2008, or Oregon, whatever year that was, 59-10, like. There's no one like that on this schedule. And those types of teams in college football are few and far between anyway. Most teams are what? Fringe top 25, fringe 20th, all the way to like 90th. And then there's a whole bunch of bad teams at the back. So I just feel like all these teams are the same. And then there's so many question marks with a lot of rosters in the ACC. So the majority of your schedule is conference. Even one of your non-conference games is a conference
Yeah.
opponent. So like 9 of the 12 games are going to be decided by a whole lot of new faces. So some of it is, I think, A, who can get up to speed quickly, but also B, who can stay engaged,
Yeah.
right? Because everybody has hopes and dreams right now. When you're 2-2, right? When you're 4-2, that's when things change for all those teams in the middle, right? I always laugh about Florida State. Florida State, everyone feels like because it's Friday night prime time, they're chalking it up. Florida State's going to come in here and they're going to do their Florida State thing. One, Florida State has often been in trouble here, regardless of year, regardless of whoever. This is the place that kind of bothers them, maybe more than some other road games do. But also, listen, they were preseason number one last year in the ACC. They didn't win anything. They didn't win anything. They won two games. And I know
Yeah.
everybody blames the quarterback for it. There's a whole lot of people on a football team, right? So once Florida State was staring at whatever they were they 0-2 or 0-3 to start, whatever it was,
Yeah.
like, that's when we'll find out all these new faces and all these new programs, both Virginia and otherwise. Who wants to keep playing? Who wants to keep playing? And that will determine a lot of these games more than anything.
Yeah, I go back to this, and I was doing some research to talk about this topic. And they're, Virginia brought in a lot of transfers, 30 plus. There are six teams on their schedule that brought in more. UNC chief among them with 41 that they brought in. Cal had a lot, Wake Forest, Washington State, Coastal Carolina, Louisville, and then even a couple teams right behind them, Virginia Tech and Florida State. So a lot of these rosters are just dramatically changed from what we've seen last year. So it never more so than now. Like, you can't really just look back at last season to kind of figure out what these teams are, just like you can't look back at last season to figure out what Virginia is, because there's, half a new roster in Charlottesville now. So I think that there's a lot to kind of be seen. Are there games that you're looking at now that may be more difficult than people anticipate, or maybe on the opposite side that maybe aren't as bad as people look at?
I have a hard time looking at schedules that way. Maybe
Okay.
it's my coach in me, but so everyone's assuming Stanford is an easier game. They obviously have had a lot of changeover, in their program in general.
Yeah.
But what does that look like? They're coming across the time zones. That has not gone well, generally for those teams that have joined the Big Ten, joined the ACC. When they go west to east, the overall record's not great. You could flip and say Cal on the other side. Now Virginia's got to go across the country the other way. Like, what does that look like? There's just so many questions, right? So Wake Forest, a game that I think, because Virginia beat them last year, I think people glance at that and go, oh, but there's a chance to win. Well, does anybody know anything about Wake Forest? New coach,
No.
a lot of new pieces, some familiar names on that roster, but I just don't know. I just don't know if that game is a gimme. Duke, I think, is fascinating that people think that's one of the harder games because of how many they won last year, all that kind of stuff. And listen, they've been good the last 2 or 3 years, but look at their schedule last year, how they got to 9-3.
Yeah.
They didn't beat anybody, right? They lost a lot of their kind of marquee matchups to Miami and SMU, and they just didn't have a whole lot of those type of games on their schedule. So I don't know if they're
Yeah.
any good or not. And I think we could say that about a lot of teams
Yeah.
on Virginia's schedule. I don't know if they're any good or not.
But not on UVA schedule. We were having a funny conversation about Syracuse football, and they won nine games last year. But I went back because someone had said, like, look at their schedule, and I went back and looked at it. I was like, oh my gosh, that schedule is ridiculous for Syracuse. That's as hard a schedule as you can have. Well, being in the ACC these days is what Syracuse has this year. But yeah, like, Duke's going to have a much more difficult schedule than that they had last year. I know that everyone's really excited about the quarterback that they got from Tulane. I think he'll be really good. The one game that I think might be a little harder now that I kind of had more time to reflect on it is that Cal game. I don't think Cal's going to be great. I don't think they'll be good. But flying all the way out to California, like, that's just going to be tough no matter who the opponent is when you're flying out there. So that's one I'm going to have my eye on. Louisville, I might feel a little bit better about. Although I have the most respect for that running back that they have there, and Isaac Brown. I think he's one of the best players in the country. So I mean, but they've played Louisville well almost every year. So, who's to say that that's an automatic loss? But
Yeah, they
yeah,
had Louisville on the ropes last year at home.
last year, yeah. And then 2 years ago, obviously we remember that Paris Jones game. They almost beat them that year. That Virginia team had no business winning that game.
Shout
So
out to
yeah.
Paris Jones, by the way. Like, in case people don't know, he's gone back to Louisville,
Yeah.
med school wise.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting path that he is now traveling. Those guys helped get him stabilized when he got hurt on the field at Louisville, and now he's going back to there, to do future life's work, wherever that leads him. He's a really interesting guy to hear talk, and so he's doing a
Yeah.
lot of motivational speaking and stuff like that as well, through his experience of that scary kind of spinal situation. But I just thought it was interesting he's going back to Louisville.
Yeah. No, for sure. And then the two games, like, I just have complete toss up right now. I have no idea what these other two teams look like. It's Florida State and UNC. I know there's a lot of people that are more optimistic. Maybe that's brand recognition, and Florida State brought in some shiny new pieces in the transfer portal. I'm not a big fan of their quarterback, Thomas Castellanos. I've seen him play. Have not been impressed. And then UNC, yeah, I don't know what to make of Bill Belichick's first year in Chapel Hill. We honestly haven't even got to hear that much out of it, like what kind of team he has, because they don't do media availability that often. So I just
That
haven't
game's
seen a lot.
later too, so
It's later in the
that falls into
season.
what I was saying earlier. Like, if they're riding high in the Bill Belichick era by the time that game comes up, then that's way more challenging. If they're 500 when that game comes up, it may be less challenging.
But that's not even the case, because we look at last year, we thought that Carolina game would be a little bit more difficult. Then we get there and Carolina's floundering through the season, but Virginia then gets trounced by them at their on their own home field. So it's tough to even say what UNC is going to look like
I
by
feel like
that time.
this, to me, the swing games that will determine what the end record looks like: NC State non-conference
Yes.
game, Washington State non-conference game. So those two, you need to win at least one, if not both, to get to that 6, 7, 8 wins or more territory. I feel like if you lose both of those, you're already putting yourself in danger of a dreaded 6 and 6 or less. Right. So those two games I feel like are really important. I think you got to have one of them. Ideally, you need both of them if you're talking 8 wins, because neither one of those teams on paper are rated all that highly. So, and again, it's on paper, transfers, new coaches, new coordinators at NC State. Yeah. So there's a lot. So we'll see. So those two games in conference, to me, the games that feel like they swing it are Cal, Wake Forest, those type of games that you don't circle on your calendar. Could be the ones that nudge you away from a 5 and 7, 6 and 6, 7 and 5 window, right? If you can win those couple of games, things look different. So you could throw Louisville in there because of how Virginia's played them, even though they're one of the teams that looks better on paper, right? The game that will decide the mood of the fan base is the last one. So
Obviously.
if they go 11 and 1, and that one is the one that's always been the one for the last 20 years, Virginia fans are still going to be in a bad mood.
It'd almost be like the UMBC loss, because it's like you had this great season, but you just can't remember any of it because you had that one loss at the end. That's what it would feel like, I feel like. Chris, I'm doing the season prediction podcast next week. But I'd be remiss if since we're talking about the schedule, do you want to put your log your prediction yet? No,
I have
you're
no prediction.
gonna.
I know people want me to make a prediction. I'm an optimist at heart. So I'm always going to say 7 and 5 or better. That's typically where I would fall if you're going to ask me to guess based on the schedule. But I don't think we know. There's too many unknown parts on Virginia's own roster, much less everything else that we just talked about in this
True.
little schedule segment. Like,
Yeah.
so just put me down for 7 and 5 so people can ridicule me if I'm right or wrong, I guess. But there's nothing scientific about that pick. It's just optimism and, like, what's best for business is them winning some games.
That's the key right there. What's best for business? All right. That's going to do it for this week in the Camp Report. Chris, thanks for coming on. Again, follow, like, subscribe on Apple, YouTube, Spotify, wherever you find the podcast. Really is trying to get that YouTube page going. So go over there, subscribe, see some of the clips that we got over there, and also the podcast, all video podcasts. from here on out. So we'll have, both everything on Apple and Spotify, wherever you've been finding the podcast, but we also have the YouTube page now. So subscribe over there. That'll do it for this week. Next week is game week. We'll have some football to talk about coming up as Virginia gets going against Coastal Carolina. But we'll see you later here on the Who's On podcast.
Field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.